Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for a short this week on the bye week to discuss trade candidates for the Baltimore Ravens. Not a topic anybody really likes to contemplate, but one that a franchise needs to consider during a down season. Ravens are not necessarily there right now, but here to discuss what might transpire over the next 2 weeks is Matt Roth. Matt, how you doing?
Ken, the Orioles have a win more recently than the Ravens, and that season sucked. So could be doing better. Thankful that we have football, though, and I think it's always important to remember there are times without football. And so, you know, you'd be thankful you have it. And really excited to talk about a topic that I do find exciting, which is how do we build more assets for the future? I think that's a very exciting component. And when I say assets, I'm really talking two core things, either more draft capital and or players for the future or more cap space for the future. So certainly a lot to look forward to.
Okay, draft capital. We could even include young players in that. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've been a little frustrated by the Ravens in recent years is the very veteran heavy presence on the practice squad. Now you don't have a permanent claim on those guys. They can be poached from you at any time, so you have to be careful. And a contending team is going to have more veterans there typically, but it's left space for players who might be developed. So that's a third area that I would point to. Anyway, the Ravens have some hope coming out of the bye. We just, we're recording this on Friday, and last night Joe Flacco pulled a rabbit out of his hat and beat the Steelers 33-31 in Cincinnati. The Ravens, according to The Athletic, have four key players returning for the Bears game, expected to return, and that's Lamar Jackson, most importantly, but also Patrick Ricard, Jadeveon Uzie, and Roquan Smith. Enormous names in terms of changing the quality of play on the field, I think we agree.
Yeah, for sure. Glad to see January Joe in October form. Was a great game. Do think there is a possibility. But like you said, Ken, I think they need to win both of the next two games against the Bears and the Dolphins in that very quick span. If they can do that, then I think, you probably don't start to move off of a bunch of the assets you have. You see if you can win the division and go from there. However, I'm fairly convinced that without Matabike and without a healthy Stanley, that this team can't compete regardless of if all the soldiers are coming back. But I don't know if you can really do a season where I don't like to use the word tanking, but where you're really trying to move current assets for future value when you have Lamar Jackson at quarterback. I just don't know if you can really do that. So I'm looking for them to win both of the Bears and Dolphins games for me to even believe that there's a shot for them to win the division. However, I don't think that they can win long-term this year without Matabike and without Stanley. I think if you look at how the defense has played without either player, it's not pretty.
Yeah, and how the offense has played.
And the offense without Stanley.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if we're saying if the goal is just to slip into the back end of the playoffs, which normally I'm okay with, if the team is well constituted, I'm fine slipping into the back end of the playoffs. The 2012 team won the Super Bowl despite being about the 12th best team in football. They're by far the worst team of the early Ravens years, of the early Harbaugh years, the 2008 to 2012. But they were able to get it done. So I want to suspend my disbelief. The value of having playoff football, including a game in Baltimore, is just very exciting in terms of being able to go to that kind of a game. We were that much more excited for the AFC Championship game, which won't be here, but almost certainly. But we can be excited about the prospect of having at least one playoff game in Baltimore if they can recover this year and win the division. So the other point I'd make is that I think it's possible for the Ravens to do what the Orioles have done in some years and be both sellers and buyers at the deadline. Mm-hmm. And the Oway trade is a perfect example of that. I think they did that trade because it was a combination of some draft value they got in exchange for an exchange of positions they thought was going to unlock a little more defensive value. So they and also a cap release.
Yeah, big cap space.
Yeah. So one of the big moves they could have made in that way. And I wasn't happy about the net return on Oway. Alohi Gilman is a rental. He also has his own cap concern that goes with that. So it makes it difficult for him to play too much above his rental value. But he is also a guy who, if he allows Hamilton to move to slot corner, which appears to be, what has happened, then the Ravens could gain terrifically from it.
Yeah, agreed. Still very frustrated that they went into the season with this safety room and ended up not being able to utilize Hamilton's full value. I just think that that was a big miss. I think there was a few big misses this year, and that was certainly one of them. I mean, Hamilton is one of one. You know, maybe Iman Wari might be Hamilton Jr. if he can put a season or two together.
He's
on tape.
Fast Hamilton Jr.
Yeah.
He is scary good.
He is, and it hasn't been much playing time, but if you watch him play, if you look at some of the PFF metrics, very, very, very good player. That kind of goes back to you and me both kind of not as excited as others on the Malachi Starks piece. I just didn't think Starks was that great of a coverage guy in college. So anyway, I'm digressing into a completely different topic, but you know, your head's swirling at this point in the year. So
yeah, let's get into it. You know, how they go about assembling draft capital is still where we're going for there. So expiring contracts, for one, are the easy contracts to trade. Now, there are a whole bunch of people in the Twitterverse who just don't understand the cap, don't understand how things work in contracts, don't understand dead money and how it flows, how you have to realize it and account for it. And those people are never going to really understand the notion. They say trade Roquan Smith. You know, they might say, trade another player who's untradeable, and all of the big contracts, Marlon Humphrey, you can't trade him. I mean, there's too much of a negative cap consequence to make that actually happen. Same with Roquan. But you could release either one of them at the end of this year. There actually becomes a window where you can get rid of them. But the return is not that great. You only get about $7 million in cap savings for losing a key player. So it's a real question in terms of how the Ravens are going to proceed into 2025. But they only have about four guys they can cut to get cap space. The two of them, Justice Hill and Broderick Washington, are it. So if they want to find cap space, it's you know, those guys, which can be fairly tough cuts. But the expiring contracts, particularly the expiring rookie deals, are where a lot of the trade value is. And we're going to go through those players in great detail, particularly the ones who have that we think have the most value. There's also a number of players on an expiring contract who really don't have any value. Do you want to take us through that list?
Yeah, so there are a lot of players, whether they are vets on a one-year deal or players that are just expiring but really aren't that important to the cause. You know, that list includes some big names like Jair Alexander, Chidobe Awuzie, David Ajabo, if you can consider him a big name, Kyle Van Noy, et cetera. And it also includes some lesser names like Ben Cleveland, Hummel, Fa'alele, Stout, Urban, Wallace, right? So there's a big group. So maybe we'll just go quickly through here. I'm not sure if Jair Alexander has much trade value, if at all.
No takers.
I think he may even be a cut candidate, depending on how much roster space they need coming up here. That was one of the moves that really hasn't worked out. I know it was only for $4 million or so, give or take, but there's only so many millions when you're looking at the cap, and it just he was a big miss. You know, Ken, do you think anyone would want to trade for him?
No, it's 1.5% of cap, and couldn't see it. I don't. The Ravens would love to be rid of just the remaining dollars on that contract because a lot of it is in base salary, or some of it's in base salary anyway. I forget if Alexander has void years that make up a portion of that deal, because that makes it hard to move. But I think it's just a guaranteed salary contract, and I'll look it up while we're talking about other people here, but. He's a guy, actually he's $2 million base salary and $2 million prorated signing bonus. So there's only half of $2 million can be saved. And by the way, it's actually pretty easy at the trade deadline because that's after the ninth week of the season, and you'll have exactly half of the salary saved. But other components that are paid as bonuses, you do not save. So signing bonuses that have already been paid, they're done. I mean, you can't get them back. So it's just a matter of the $2 million. Alexander has there. And I don't think anybody would be very excited about taking Alexander for $1 million for the rest of the year right now.
Right. And you, so it's $2 million in salary. You'd be able to save $1 million, but you'd replace him with a player maybe at the vet minimum around 900,000. Yeah. So you'd save. So then it's, you save $1 million, but then you add about 450K. So you're saving about $500,000, which I actually think every dollar matters. If there's someone who would want Alexander, I think what you do with him is if he's coming out of the bye, if he can play in the Bears in the Dolphins game, I'm not saying you play him the whole time. You want to win these games. We've discussed that. Mm-hmm. We want to win these games, but I don't think it would be a bad idea to get him in there, see how he's moving, see how he's adapted. Because if you lose one of those two games and you get to that point where I really think you have to sell, and he puts at least something decent on tape, maybe someone who has some massive injuries in the corner room says, hey, let me just get him. And then, and we don't get much. We might get a conditional seventh, right? Something very, very, maybe a next year or the following year seventh. Mm-hmm. But if we can save that $500,000, I think everything everything matters at this point. So yeah, that's Alexander. The next gentleman is Chidobe Awuzie. I actually think he's played pretty well this year, but mm-hmm. the guy just can't stay healthy. That's kind of a theme with a lot of these Ravens. I mean, to go along with Alexander, I think that if he can put a couple good games on tape and the Ravens lose, you know, he might be someone who can net you a seventh or something like that. I don't know if it's much more, maybe a low sixth. But I could see someone wanting him because he has played well. It's just, you just don't know what week he's going to play and which week he isn't.
Yeah. I think he could have value. And there's some guys on this list who they don't have absolutely no value, but they have maybe a little bit of value. And I'd go to the next name is Ben Cleveland.
Yeah.
He doesn't have it does not seem to have any value other than as a backup for the Ravens. There could be a team that says, you know what? We've had two guards injured this year already. We need a player like Ben Cleveland. Somebody who's a big body who can step in right away. They might even say the same thing about Daniel Fa'alele.
Right.
And we need a body right now that we can have, but the return is going to be very small. It's going to be a seventh or in some cases an exchange of sevenths or whatever. Fa'alele is on this list too, of I think the guys who have limited value. At this point, half of the problem is that both players are rentals, and half of the problem is that they haven't shown that they can play particularly well. Cleveland's not breaking a lineup that includes Fa'alele and Voorhees, who both of those guys have played okay. So, but mm-hmm. Fa'alele is there's so much negativity over him on Twitter that people are just not getting a clear message, and also the PFF grading system is kind of maligning him in a way that is unreasonable.
Yeah, Fa'alele, he's an enigma. He's a decent pass blocker. He's a below average run blocker. He loses in the loudest way possible. So, yep. you know when you're at work and you make a mistake and you maybe curse under your breath and you fix it and you move on. When Fa'alele makes a mistake, it's like someone stocking shelves in the grocery store and everything from the shelf crashes over and burns. Right? You got all the kids running over to look at you wondering what the hell has happened. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't have value, especially when it comes to pass blocking. I think he does have real value there. I do think the drawback is you're very limited in some of the run concepts that you can do with Fa'alele. And I think that, does that matter all that much? I don't know. Maybe so, maybe not. But if I'm looking for someone who can just be a passable guard from a pass blocking perspective, which as we get through the season and guards start to drop off, people are going to be looking for that. Yeah, I think he could. I think he could bring something.
There is real value to an average NFL guard, and Daniel Fa'alele could easily be cast in that light. He's not a replacement level guard. He's north of that. He is well north of that, and he's not a good guard. I'm not claiming that, but he's an average NFL guard. He's 14th among 57 in PFF's pass blocking rating, but when they put the two scores together, they come up with the overweight run blocking, and they end up with a score for Fa'alele that puts him near the 25th percentile, I should say.
Yeah, he's the inverse Linderbaum, right?
Yeah.
So Ken, if you're a team, you need a guard. You've had a guard or two go down. You're in the playoff hunt. What are you willing to part with? Are you willing to give a four and have the Ravens send you Fa'alele and a five, right? And so, you know, we basically move up around.
That's too much. That's too much. I wouldn't do that. My immediate reaction is that I would probably trade a six straight up for Fa'alele, and I might trade a five for a six, possibly. Even that sounds a little high to me, but probably a six straight up, and a non-conditional sixth is what I would say.
Okay, yeah, that's a good point. I do think, you know, for those of you listening to this, there it does matter, right? So whether you're at the beginning of the sixth round, whether you're a conditional sixth all the way at the end of the round, whether it's a sixth this year or next year, right? There are a lot of different permutations that you can make this work. And, you know, if we do get to that point where we're going to start to unload some players, I would like to see DaCosta start to climb up rounds, if possible, and do a pick swap, kind of like we did with we've done in the past. I do think that it's like, hey guys, we have a player. We think this player has some value. We're willing to give you a fourth and this player for a third, right? Now, I'm not saying that player is Daniel Fa'alele, right? But for example, any round we can really climb up in the draft, I think there's a lot of value because we're going to have a lot of picks in the upcoming draft,
right? Of course. I mean, Mark Andrews, that would be a great price to get for him if you could figure out a way to do that. And you know, if you look at the JJ values, I still think they're better than a lot of the flatter scales because the flatter scales run into problems with how what the value of the replacement level player is. They ascribe value to it, and there really is none. Those guys are available in the street. So I really believe it is the slope should be more, the curve should be more sloped than it is. And I think that, you know, if you look at the value of a early three versus a late three, even, it's a lot of difference. So anyway, trades where you move up, you know, 20 picks and lose a player like Andrews, they well could be worth it. That's a lot of value to harvest. Let's go through the rest of this list fairly quickly here. John Jenkins has played some good nose tackle, has shown a little bit of pass rush ability. The Ravens can't afford to lose him, and he's a big part of their get heavy change that has helped the defense be better against the run this last week, is to play two nose tackles on most downs that aren't obvious passing downs. Now, the Ravens have a much bigger problem there without Tavius Robinson in terms of what they do on passing downs. Yep. But the two nose tackle route seems to be a pretty good choice for them, a pretty good schematic change that Orr's made.
Yeah, I mean, Jenkins is a player who he's long in the tooth, but, you know, he's played a lot of snaps over the last 2 years. We're trying to limit those snaps to the extent possible. I think he pops. He has a couple plays in each game where he stuffs a run, where he maybe gets the quarterback. I think he has some value to a team that, you know, again, that might be a 6th round pick or something to that effect. But I think of these list of guys that have limited value, I think Jenkins is really one that's up there who you bring him in for a low cost. He can make a difference. He can make a play or two in a game for a playoff team.
He's a cheap contract too, so that would make sense. And some bonuses have been paid already, so it's practically vet minimum. Joe Noteboom, I don't think has any value currently. He's been terrible. And by the way, I mean, this is the worst possible situation. But if you look at the Ravens offensive line, I don't know how it could be fixed, because the two biggest problems are supposed to be your two best players. Right now, left tackle and center are the two biggest problems on the Baltimore Ravens. It's not either guard spot. Both those guys are playing better than the left tackle and the center. It's a God's honest truth about it. And if people want to bash on Falele and waste their time doing that, it'd be much better if we could figure out a way to get a new left tackle in there. And they do not have an answer that will work. I'm not convinced that Vincent is the guy in 2025. He may see a few snaps. It's the only strategy they have is hope with those two guys that they have at left tackle. And at center, it's a really sad situation, because he's one of the tradable commodities, and we'll get into him in a moment. But you know, the Ravens offensive line is an utter and complete mess in terms of the options to fix it right now.
Yeah, I would agree, Ken. I think Voorhees and Falele have taken a lot of heat. Maybe there have been times they should take heat. We all agree with that. However, they're not the two shining problems on this line, and that really stinks. So moving on here, I agree with you. Noteboom doesn't have any value. Ajabo, I don't think he has any value. Do you?
None. Has a $2 million hit. The Ravens would love to be rid of the contract, but it's not happening.
They could have been rid of it, though, right? They could have tried to move him before the season.
I'm not sure there was a taker then, but yes, you're right. That would have been the time. Before camp, somebody was hurt somewhere. Ajabo, hey, we got this former second round pick who was great at Michigan. Sure.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Moving on. Patrick Ricard. I think a lot of it depends on, does he come back and lay the hammer? If he comes back and some of the offense has really changed materially for the positive, and, you know, you see Derrick Henry running behind him and, you know, he's collecting highlight reel blocks, I could see someone maybe willing to part with a 7th or something for him. I don't know if it commands all that much. I will say, though, if you're a playoff team and you bring Patrick Ricard in, you know, that could certainly help any team if you can use him right.
Yep. I would agree with that. Jordan Stout, if somebody needed a punter, I suppose. You also get, with Jordan Stout, you get one of the best holders in the league. So there you get real value. I don't think the Ravens will break up the Wolfpack. I don't think the draft capital is worth it. I think they're basically going to hang on to these guys long term, both Loop and Stout. I think they really like what Stout has become as a holder. I think they like Nick Moore, even though he's really old now. He's in his third season and he's 33.
Yeah. No, it's... All right, Brent Urban. He's a space eater. He has a role, not an explosive playmaker. Right, hasn't been able to really make explosive plays for a while. I'm not sure he has all that much value.
And I mean, it's way more value to the Ravens than he has to anybody else. So right now, for the Ravens, he's about their only mix of bodies run defender that they have in terms of putting a 5-tech on the field and base. The other thing that I think they may have to do with Urban immediately after the bye, if they don't get another outside linebacker, he may end up being a base outside linebacker, a guy who has to basically set the edge I mean, could be in base or nickel, but really even in base, he may be a guy that they have to move to the outside. Could be you line up three nose tackles inside. That would really be something to see. And then Urban on the edge, on one edge, and then either Van Noy or Green on the other edge. But they need to save. Van Noy and Green need to be saved for passing downs. And they don't have Tavius Robinson anymore, who was the big snap eater on that entire line, who had the versatility to play both pass and run downs, pass downs on the inside when needed.
Agreed. Speaking of Van Noy, he is a player who is also a potential trade candidate. It's funny, I was watching a show in the offseason, and they had Van Noy on. Van Noy's a great guy. I think people kind of universally really like him. And they were asking, has EDC talked to you about your next contract? And he's like, oh, you know, EDC will take care of me. Kind of had some sort of language to that effect. Mm-hmm. And I remember listening to that thinking, oh, man, I really hope EDC doesn't give him another contract. You know, like you get to the point where you need to be doing year-to-year contracts once you get to a certain age. And sure enough, you know, you get a soft tissue injury to start off the year. And, you know, he might not be the same player ever again, but he may not return to form until, you know, a few weeks or maybe even a month or so from now. Appreciate that he's back playing. But I think these next 2 weeks are going to bode pretty heavy for his value. Now, maybe that the value doesn't change all that much. Maybe it's 20 or 30 slots in the draft towards the end of the draft. But if Van Noy can show he's got a little bit of burst, then I think people would take a look at him. But ultimately, I think his value is pretty limited by age and injury.
I would agree. A 6 for a 7, maybe in his case. I mean, it's not going to be much. It's not as much as either Fa'alele or potentially Cleveland could bring back even. And that's pretty sobering. There's no future value to a player like that. There isn't any future value with Cleveland or Fa'alele either, other than they, in the case of either of those two, if you like them in your system, they might not have a particularly high contract demand for 26. So Fa'alele will be more. Cleveland will be less because he hasn't played. But if you end up liking Cleveland for 4 or 5 games the rest of the year with whatever team he ends up with, or actually, I guess it could be half a season, then you could end up wanting to pay him. And that's, by the way, it was exactly that situation where Jared Gaither absolutely hoodwinked the Chargers into his second contract, what they really regret doing.
For sure. All right. And then that brings us to Tylan Wallace. I'm not sure. He always has some flashes here or there. You know, he plays on special teams. I'm not sure there's really much value there aside from a really low, maybe conditional pick or next year pick. I will say for that list of people we went through, you're basically looking at a list of 6th or 7th round picks, you know, at most. Right. Maybe fought lately, maybe a bit more if someone gets desperate. Right. I mean, because that starting offensive line is at least some value. But, you know, again, you could be making trades for 2027 picks where when you trade for that additional year out in the future, a lot of times you can get one extra round higher.
That's right.
So, you know, I don't think we need to have 18 sixth round picks this year. But, you know, it would be nice to maybe get an extra 5th round pick for the following year.
Yeah, I'm absolutely a fan of picking up 2027 draft capital for multiple reasons. For starters, we're going to erode some value in the comp formula with any trades that are made, and that needs to be considered when we get to the next guys in particular. But second of all, if the Ravens are truly going to finish this season poorly, and that's where you are typically if you're considering being sellers, they might be drafting in the top 15. And if they're drafting in the top 15, then you certainly, while not sure that you have all the value you need in this draft, you're in a better position in 26 than you likely will be in 27. And you want to have some additional draft assets you're building for that season. Although I'm not sure we can actually say where the Ravens will be in 27 right now. This roster is kind of on a tightrope right now, walking across between the World Trade Centers on a tightrope kind of thing in terms of what this team might be in 26 to support the 27 draft capital that they have.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Ken. I won't delve into it for more than 10 seconds, but I do think, like you said, this team's kind of at a crossroads. When you have a weak offensive line, you have a weak pass rush, it's hard to build a good team. Now, they've got great receivers. They've got some pretty good secondary members, although a lot of them aren't playing up to par. But, you know, they're missing that core, and I'm not sure how quickly you can turn that core around. So one of the things I'd like to see them do is if they acquire a lot of these picks, I would like to see them use some of these picks in the offseason to move them for players, right? So in the offseason, we may have a lot of draft capital, maybe not as high as some of the top teams because they're just, it's just weighted so high, but we should be able to move draft picks for players, maybe fourth year players who are players on an expiring contract. But hopefully this draft capital and cap savings opens us up to being able to bring in more players. And just, we've got to get better line play. We've got to get better pass rush, right? And you can make some moves if you've got a bevy of extra picks. You know, even if they're lower, you can still find some value.
Right. All right, well, let's get into the players who actually have some value. And these are all expiring contracts. There are, as I would see it, seven guys on the Ravens. And there's some, obviously some additional ones too, but that we talked about earlier. But these guys have a little bit more trade value. And we'll start with Mark Andrews, who's the biggest name in terms of franchise history probably in the group. But assuming you're the cap savings is $3.5 million. Let's start with that. There's no void years on his contract. So you can save $3.5 million in cap that you can roll into next year and use. Ravens need a lot of cap dollars, particularly if they're unable to extend Lamar. So if they are unable to extend Lamar, first of all, they'll be in tremendously tight cap position for acquiring anybody else. But just to fund his contract next year, they need a lot of dollars to fill out the roster at all. So $3.5 million of cap savings is not insignificant. What do you think that the Ravens could get for Mark Andrews in terms of a trade, a value in return?
Yeah, I worry that he just has not been that effective part of the offense for quite some time now. He's a big name. People know him. And I think that his value from an asset perspective has diminished. You know, he's not the 15 touchdown a year Andrews that people would really pony up for. With that being said, if you're a team that's trying to compete and you're looking to maybe help a young quarterback, right, give him a safety valve, Mark Andrews is the ultimate safety valve, right? And if you have a team that has other weapons on offense, he's a really nice secondary option that you can bring in. I think a fifth sounds probably fair. Some people might say, hey, that's a lot lower than I would trade Andrews for, but it's the half of his 7 million base that you get, that 3.5 is one of the big things, and maybe about a fifth. What do you think, Ken?
Yeah, a fifth or a sixth, and it might be a fifth for a sixth is what they could really get on the outside there. I want to get to the JJ points chart for just a second because I want to do this really quickly because it's important to the who's got it. That okay, here we go. So, there we go. This does not seem to be showing up here. I'm not sure why. I know Draft Tech has it on their site. Let me give you one more second here. Okay, so the idea is if you're trading, there we go. If you're trading a sixth round pick, let's say for a fifth round pick, oftentimes what you'll get is you get a floater that would be a pick at the end of the fifth round. I've heard Brian say, though, that they have to only trade their own pick. So let's say you trade him to Washington as a team, and they pick up pick number 160, and they trade back a sixth round pick, which presumably would be their own pick and might be a little higher than otherwise. Let's say they trade pick 193. Okay, that net pickup is 13.6 points, 27.4 for the fifth minus 13.8 for the sixth, essentially is the same as a sixth round pick,
right?
At exactly 193. That's the kind of trade they might get for Mark Andrews, I think. Is it a straight sixth? Is that reasonable? It's probably too much. And a fifth for a seventh, it's probably too, it could be about right. A fifth for a seventh would be the pipe dream way. A fifth for a seventh nets you almost the entire value of a fifth. The only thing the other team is getting back is they're getting a draft pick that they can use to beat the people who are fighting with them for UDFAs. That's right. Really the only value to that. So every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
I that would be the spot I'm in. No, certainly no more than a fifth or a seventh exchange would be where I'd be.
Yeah, but we're both in agreement that if this team loses one of the next two, Andrews most certainly has to go, just to free up some dollars and to get an asset in.
Yeah, I think there are some positives you could get as secondary effects. It might really give Isaiah Likely more confidence. It'd certainly give him more playing time. And maybe Isaiah Likely is more likely to sign a long-term deal with the Ravens. And he's one of three guys that they really need to get under lock and key. Lock and key is the wrong term, but they need to get signed at this point, along with Travis Jones and potentially Linderbaum as well.
Right. All right. So moving on to DeAndre Hopkins. So if they were to trade him, the 2025 cap savings would be, is that about $4 million, Ken?
No, they lose. They actually would have a net negative in terms of cap savings. Yeah, mm-hmm. There's no savings. There's a loss, mm-hmm. But they might be able to harvest a little bit of value. You know, here's the Ravens' current position is this: they have $14 million roughly in cap space. They want to acquire assets for next year. Hopkins for this year, if they're sellers, may not be of any value to them, regardless of what the accounting is from this is. But it doesn't change the all of that money will have to be accelerated at the beginning of the league year in any case, or if they trade him now, it gets accelerated similarly.
So yeah, there's no free lunch here.
There's no free lunch. Either way, they have to pay the money that they signed Hopkins for, with the exception of half of his remaining salary, which is about $600,000. So right. Of the $5 million, they can save about $600,000 of the total is the way to think of it. And maybe a 2027 sixth round pick might be a reasonable return for Hopkins. It wouldn't be much.
No. And I think some people don't realize that the cap rolls over each year. So your savings gets added into the future. And then the void years basically spreads the cap hit into future years and lowers the current cap hit. But when that player leaves the roster, the entire void year cap hit hits. Yes. Right. So that's where you get that loss, or that negative $4.4 million of cap gymnastics, as opposed to a positive.
Yeah. He had $3.75 million of his contract, of his $5 million contract, was in void years.
Right.
So the remaining $3 million of that will all come due all at once as soon as he's cut or traded.
And you can't hide from it.
No, you can't. It's done. It's money effectively already spent. They gave the money already to Hopkins, in fact, but they can't get it back. But the other part is that they have to just account for it. The only thing they could do is if they kept Hopkins, I'm not 100% sure whether any of that can be reaccounted for in a different way. So if they decided they want to sign Hopkins for 2026, there might be a way that they could move some around. But it'd be so trivial and not worth it.
Sure. You only sign him if you want him. You don't sign it because you want to defer the costs. I think happens is you don't then have that big dead cap hit, that big balloon hit, right? So you'll have whatever was the void that was supposed to hit that year, but then the other money that was pushed in the future doesn't hit yet. So again, there's some benefit there, but you should never be signing players because you want to avoid the void years coming due that year. They're coming due regardless. So, you know, for those listening thinking you can get creative, this isn't the government, right? We can't do that stuff. this is going to hit one way or the other. So yeah, I agree with you, Ken. I think DeAndre has pretty low value. And you know, six probably sounds a 27-6 sounds about right. It's pretty low.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah. Moving into Alohi Gilman. So we liked what Alohi Gilman did. It wasn't great, right, by any stretch, but you know, having just an average player in a position of need and allowing one of our best players to fill that position where they're much better at, it certainly brings a lot of value to the Ravens specifically. However, you don't have him after this year. And so if this season is going nowhere, you could potentially save a little bit of money. Maybe, you know, I was thinking maybe about a sixth. I think you're probably thinking the same, right, Ken?
About a sixth in 2026. Cap savings is about $1.8 million. He's very cheap. The Chargers basically ate any bonus prorations already. So the Ravens only have his remaining salary, which is about $3.5 million for the season. The prorated remainder of that. So if they got rid of half of it, it'd be about $1.8 million. This is not a in the middle move. This isn't a buyers and sellers kind of Orioles move. This is a you're all out on the season.
Yes.
Because as soon as you do this, you have to revert to Hamilton playing the back end again, we presume, unless they're willing to give it to Sanusi Kane or do something else funny with it. And I think for a lot of reasons, it would be Hamilton going back to the back end. I think he's probably undertakes a little more injury risk playing on the front end, and you would want to try and maybe reduce that if you were giving up on the season.
Yeah, I agreed, Ken. I wish I had the time to study more of the special team snaps to really figure out, is a player like Sanusi Kane versus Ruben Lowry, what's the benefit? What's the give and take there? I don't get the sense, just looking at some of the numbers, that the Ravens special teams units are really all that highly rated. They seem like they're right around average, maybe a little bit below average. And I don't know. It seems like this team, I know you and Voss talked about it. This team has a lot of special teams players. I get that you can have some, but I don't like having someone like Kane who you're really uncomfortable with playing.
Yeah. Kane hasn't had a good tackling year so far on special teams. So that's one thing that is not going in his favor. And yeah, I don't know. He's almost a C patch guy in terms of what he does. I mean, Hummel's got it this year, but I don't know. I don't know what the future of Kane holds. It really looked like he'd made progress towards winning the third safety role, but the Ravens have been reticent to put him on the field.
Yeah, for sure. All right, and as we said, or maybe we didn't mention, about $1.8 million in cap savings for Gilman, which I think is material. Even if you do replace him with a player that has a $450,000 cap hit, it still saves you about $1.5 million, which every dollar counts when Lamar is going to hit $70 million on the cap. All right. Next up, we have Travis Jones. So to me, this is kind of the prize jewel of tradable assets. I think Travis Jones is a very good player. I think that normally I think he could command a lot on the market. However, he's had an injury, and I don't think he's looked as explosive since the injury. One of the things that worries me a little bit with him is he's had a couple injuries now over the course. He had one last year, I think, in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game that held him out for a few weeks. He had one, I think it was in training camp of his rookie season, which held him out for a little bit. And I'm worried that he doesn't have the durability that maybe you would like to sign him to that long-term deal. However, I will say, I think he has the most talent and he's really important to the defense. I think he really unlocked Matabike and Owe and Van Noy last year as pass rushers. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to Travis Jones, Ken, what are you thinking of the assets we could acquire for him?
Yeah, I mean, before the injury, I might have said a 2026 third was very obtainable. Now I think it's a 2026 third or fourth. If you think about it, Travis Jones will probably sign a fairly significant contract. It'll probably return a fourth round compensatory pick. It's possible it'd be a third in 27. But if they have to wait till 27 for it, they might take a fourth in exchange this year as a reasonable return on it. And I do think when you have a good player like that who can fundamentally change how another team plays defense, I think you can charge a premium for it. It's one of the cases where you can trade, you know, a really top-end player. My first preference is get Travis Jones signed. He's the most important of the three, of the big three, and I think you need to get him signed. I cannot imagine that the Ravens have not been trying to do so. I think that I'd be shocked if they have not been trying to do so.
Injuries concern you at all, Ken?
Of course, but it concerns me more for what his current trade value is. You know, he's injured prior to the trade deadline in his contract year, and he could get to the end of this year and his value could be fine again. I wouldn't want to sell low right now if his comp stock goes way up again at the end of the year. And then you have him at a cheap price for the remainder of the season. So he's only got he's got $1.7 million remaining on his deal for the last 9 weeks.
Right, right. And I don't think you can franchise him. I think the franchise tag amount for defensive tackles is just too high. I think for 2025, it was about $25 million. And I think that's more than you would want to pay him for one singular year.
I would agree. And I'm not even sure if they could make that work given what Jackson's contract is currently now. So it'd be very difficult.
Right. Likely would be probably easier to franchise tag. But I think it would be significantly less. So, okay. So yeah, we agree that there's definitely value there. We agree that not much of a cap savings, more important to the Ravens. Probably the best case scenario is they get him re-signed. If they don't think they can re-sign him, would you consider trading Travis Jones in a fourth for a third in this upcoming draft? I have my JJ points up here.
I'll have to take a look here. So you're trading, let's say you might be trading pick number 112 is worth 70. That's the one you're giving up. And you're picking up something maybe around 86. You pick up about 90 points. It's like the equivalent of a high fourth. Like about the third pick in the fourth round. That might be about right.
Yeah, that's pretty compelling to me. Mm-hmm. Because it's not just that you get the equivalent of a high pick in the fourth. It's you actually get moved up into the third where, you know, that's where we got Travis Jones or Madubuike, right? I think we got them both in the Travis third Jones, round.
Yeah.
So there are good players in that third round. And I am excited by the thought of climbing up into rounds and not just acquiring more picks. Obviously more picks is great, but again, I don't need 18 picks in the sixth round. Getting another pick in the third round, if we had to sacrifice a fourth for it and you didn't think you could re-sign Jones, that would get me a little excited.
Well, I mean, one of the things they could do if they wanted to do that, they have 5 fifth round picks, I think, right now. If they wanted to trade two to move up, two and a player to move up, that might make the deal more palatable to another team, particularly if they don't really buy into JJ and they believe in the flatter valuations. I do think the fifth round picks the Ravens have will end up in some very, very serviceable players. And you'll always have people who want to cherry pick and say, well, this player didn't work out and this player didn't work out and this player didn't work out. If you look at the history of the Baltimore Ravens, they've had a lot of success drafting in rounds 4, 5, and 6. And a lot of it's been developmental linemen. Some of it's been dimebacks. They've had success with tight ends. It looks like the Aeneas Peebles may be a success. They've had success with those guys. Zach Sealer is a 7. Yeah. I mean, those picks are not worth nothing. And don't believe Eric DaCosta's own words that says those picks are lottery tickets. He doesn't believe it, not even for a second. He says it to try and basically not make people averse to trading him picks. But the truth of the matter is, those picks are a lot more dangerous in Eric DaCosta's hands than in other players' hands.
Yeah. I am all for having stacked rounds. I think there's a lot of benefit there. I would like to see the Ravens, where appropriate, and that doesn't mean all the time, that doesn't mean go ham, go nuts, but hey, if the draft is going and there's a player you want and you need to, you know, trade that current round pick plus a fifth to move up a spot or two or three or four, depending on where you are, get the players you want and, you know, make it happen. We're running out of time here with Lamar and, need to get it done.
Okay, let's move on. The next guy we want to talk about is Charlie Kolar. And a guy who, it's not apparent that he has tremendous value, but a lot of teams will need a blocking tight end. We saw the contract given to Josh Oliver. In a lot of ways, he represents a difficult commodity to find. And I think there will be a group or a team that says, not only does this guy play special teams and he's a heck of a blocker, but he's receiving value has not been unlocked in Baltimore because they have likely an Andrews.
Right. And when you're third on the receiving depth chart at tight end on a team that runs better than any other team, right, at least over his time here with the Ravens, there's a lot of value left to be unlocked there. Not much of a cap savings. He's at pretty close to the minimum because of where he was drafted, even though he's in his fourth year here. I think he could return a sixth or a seventh, maybe. Maybe it's one of those things where you can, you know, maybe climb up around. But I would be happy if Charlie Kohler came to my team and I was in a playoff run. So, yep. You know, I do think that matters.
Yep.
All right. Moving on to Isaiah Likely. So this is one of the last two big dominoes, Likely, and then we'll get to Linderbaum. Likely, along with, it seems like, all of our tradable assets this year have been hurt at some point in time. Luckily, not out for the season. He's already been back, but really hasn't been much a part of the offense. He's been out there, but has not been looked at all that much. Was a really good player, has had really good athleticism, made some really good catches, and just been a really solid player in the past. I think that this is one of the ones where over the next two games, how does he play? How does he look? Because if you're someone who sees, wow, Likely looks good, he's fresh off the bye, looks like, you know, he's really gotten to where he needs to be and finally has his sea legs under him, is he the type of person that can help you maybe do a pick swap and get into the third, or maybe get a pick in the fourth? That would kind of be the ceiling on what I think he could bring. And then he'd bring you a couple bucks of cap savings, but really not all that much, about $1.5 million once you factor in the new player that would have to replace him.
Yeah, I mean, we're down about $1.2 million after you get a new player. But yeah, I mean, it's tragic where Isaiah Likely is. I mean, he got hurt at the wrong time. He missed games. I would have said a higher pick was in order. Likely has a little more hidden value to another team in that they can franchise him after this year. And another team may be less constrained in terms of doing that. So the Ravens could unlock value they can't harvest potentially by franchising Likely. And I think they very well might not. In terms of what he's likely to go for, I think there's he probably would return a fourth round pick in 2027. The hope would be you could get a fourth round pick in 2026 instead. And it might be a fifth round pick in 27. I mean, that might be the more realistic number, but I wouldn't trade him for that. I think the incremental value of being able to franchise him, just the value of keeping Lamar happy with Likely is pretty significant.
Yeah, I'd like to keep him around. I think the franchise tag makes the most sense given the positions. I think in 25 tight ends, the franchise value was just under $14 million, so way more palatable than that defensive tackle number of around $25 million. I think that with Andrews gone, maybe Kohler gone, Likely can be a big part of the team next year. So I'd like to see him stay. If you were offered something like a third, maybe I'd start to consider it. But hoping they're working on an extension with him. But you know, just got injured at the wrong time, and feels like we've been saying that a lot this year. All right, and then last we get into Tyler Linderbaum. So Linderbaum has had a very interesting career. He's had years where he was a very poor pass blocker and a very good run blocker. He's had years where he was a pretty good pass blocker and a very good run blocker. And then now we're back to him being a very good run blocker, but a poor pass blocker. So kind of an odd player. I think he was undersized, maybe a bit short-armed from the jump. Certainly has the ability to move and block in the run and has made some really impressive highlight blocks in the run. But you can't overlook the fact that he is one of the weak links on the offensive line right now when it comes to pass blocking. And, you know, people always joke that it's Voorhees and Fa'alele bringing him down. I actually think it's probably the opposite at this point, where they're holding their own for the most part, not great players, but they're holding their own. And Tyler's not doing a very good job. With that being said, he has a pretty big name. He's gotten a lot of accolades. Ken, what do you think someone could get Tyler Linderbaum for?
So my hope would have been higher before this, but that they could get either a 2026 third or a 2027 second. That would have been my hope a month and a half ago, probably. Yeah. If they were going through the season and they were just in a position where they had to trade him, and we didn't know how bad it would get at that point. But now I'd say, you know, a fourth in 2026 or a third in 2027 is the most they could hope for. It probably ends up with a good contract, 16, 17 million per year from somebody who will probably be overpaying him when they give him that. I don't want the Ravens to give him that contract. So, you know, we're in a, you know, we're in a tough spot from that perspective. It's a position where the Ravens are going to have to decide, I think, to go cheap. And that really underscores the failure in terms of drafting a guy in the first round at the center position. Because even if they end up being a very good player, and Linderbaum's made a couple Pro Bowls here, it's just not a position where, given the pooling of offensive linemen, that you can afford to keep guys and take advantage of the market frictions available in either the fifth year option or the franchise tag.
Yeah, I think if you're drafting a center in the first round, it needs to be an absolute surefire elite center. And I think that those don't come around all that often, right?
And the first round picks, they haven't been those guys. And Linderbaum's probably been the best, but Garrett Bradbury and Billy Price and all these other guys, trying to think of the other, Cole Strange would be another one who fell into that category. And he's not a terrible player, but he's just knows it wasn't worth it. There's been a lot of really weak centers drafted in the first round. People don't seem to you know, learn their lesson. Creed Humphrey, who's the best of them all by a wide margin, was a second round pick.
Right.
And he was, I think, a late second round pick at that. So that's, if the Ravens are drafting at center, and they very well might be again next year, it should be where they consider putting their second or third round pick, but definitely not their first round pick.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. For those of you who don't know, in 25, the franchise tag value for a center is grouped in with offensive linemen, right? Mm-hmm. So that's some of the frictions that Ken's talking about here, which is over $25 million, right? There's no way you're going to franchise a center for $25 million, even if they were playing very well, let alone where we are right now. I agree completely, Ken. It just really sucks to see some of the value diminished from Linderbaum, from Travis Jones, from Mark Andrews. I mean, we're definitely hoping for more, but it seems like we're in a spot now where a lot of our tradable assets just don't have the value that we thought they could have had at the beginning of the year. And it just seems like overall, most players have not taken a step in the positive direction this year, which is why the team's 1-5.
Yeah. It's Linderbaum is probably the best example of that, because he's really regressed so much as a pass blocker. But you know, a guy who, if you were having offensive line problems and your center is hurt for a contender, I mean, Linderbaum is the guy you would want. If you can go to the street, I mean, a guy who can come in and play with whatever system you've got and lead the offensive line, and probably you don't miss a beat in a lot of ways. I mean, Linderbaum would be terrific for that. You have to put up with some pass blocking weakness, and that's. You know, become more apparent. Fortunately, I mean, he's been healthy. That hasn't been the problem with him. Yeah. The problem has been the pass blocking.
Yep. All right. Any other players you think that maybe we missed in going through this list? I think, you know, like as you mentioned before, someone might say, hey, trade Roquan. Well, the dead cap hit that we would have to take in this year would exceed the cap room that we have. Now, maybe in the offseason, you could get creative, right? You could cut Roquan or you could trade Roquan. Not going to trade for him for as much, but, you know, you could find a way to maneuver it, but you're still going to, you know, take a pretty big hit that you may or may not be able to fit in there. You know, at the end of the day, as I'm looking through this list, and I'm looking at all the players, you know, this team really needs to, number one, get healthy. And I would say even more important than that, they need to start playing better. You know, if you look at all the individual contributors, they're not playing up to their standard. And that goes for many of the players on this team. And that's really the only way this season can turn around, is if we can really get some improvement from existing players that we have on this roster, whether it's them coming back or, you know, players like Linderbaum or Likely or Travis Jones taking their play to the next level.
Yeah. Roquan, you know, would be certainly in that group. And you know, looking back at the Roquan trade, I think it was an outstanding one. I think, you know, and Voss does not agree with me on this, but this is where I am on the thing. They traded a second and a fifth. They got a season of outstanding play that turned around the 22 defense, even though Lamar's injury cost them any kind of postseason hope. They got two all-pro years, because it's been three all-pro years in 23 and 24 when the Ravens were outstanding and had a real Super Bowl chance. I don't think there's anything wrong with the money they've paid Roquan that they've guaranteed him for those three seasons plus all of the bonus they guaranteed him. I don't think there's a problem. It probably works out to, you know, $25, $30 million a year, but I think it's a reasonable total. They can walk away from the contract this next year and save $7 million. If they don't, and they decide to keep him, they can walk away in the final year, 27, for $20 million. So I think that come this offseason, he'll either be extended or probably released would be my guess. Another possibility is a salary cut request that the Ravens could make. And that's a possibility too, if he wants to, you know, get back in line. And you know, we've seen stranger things from Roquan himself, who already this year in one of the games in week two had one of the greatest games ever by a Ravens inside linebacker ever. And if he were to have several more games like that the rest of the year and return to form, basically, he could be all pro again. He could be a second team all pro. We've already had some injuries at the position. Fred Warner is out now. And you know, certainly possible that that he'd be a guy who could emerge to be at the top of the pile. The Ravens may not even be having this discussion at the end of the year. I did want to mention one other thing before we cut out here, and that is that every player the Ravens trade comes with two important consequences. Mm-hmm. Number one, we've mentioned a lot of times during this, is that any player has his cap savings offset by the value of a player, usually going to be a vet minimum kind of guy or even a initial year's minimum.
So yeah, it could be as low as a two.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, could be a R or one. Yeah, then those players will eat up some of the gain you have in cap value. So if they traded two or three players, they're going to have another 1.5 to 2 million. They're going to have to add in terms of cap value just to replace those players, cap cost. So that's number one. Number two is that any contribution those players would make to the comp formula, including just being an offset to a signed player. So DeAndre Hopkins, for example, a great example of that. He won't generate a comp pick for the Ravens, but he will, you know, be a guy who offsets somebody else that the Ravens might sign, particularly at a bargain level, depending on where that might be. They might sign another safety. They might sign a wide receiver. It could be a lot of different positions, but that offset has real value. So it's not just the guys who generate picks. It's the entire list. That said, the Ravens have a lot of guys who could potentially generate picks, and they may be overstocked with that. So they should be willing to move off some of the value they have now.
Yeah. Do you think they will? So say they lose the Bears game. Do you think they will actually start to try to harvest some value here? Or yes. Do you think they're just going to plow forward? You do.
Yes. I think they'll for certain try and make moves. I think there haven't been that many times in Ravens history where this opportunity has come up, but DaCosta is too sharp, and the Ravens needs for just the cap space alone are too great to not consider that. And also the what I just mentioned about, hey, they may have too many players who could generate a comp pick. They can trim that number by one and not really lose anything appreciable in terms of what they lose in terms of draft capital back in 2027.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so too. And, you know, a lot of people I've heard a lot of different podcast people on Twitter saying, hey, now's the time to trade your one, trade your two, bring in another player. I think that's absolutely ridiculous. It just makes absolutely no sense to me. We're having problems in both trenches. You're not going to be able to trade all your draft capital and fix that. And this year is going, if they continue to play poorly, is going to be one of those years that allows you to get a Hamilton, right? Or allows you to get one of those maybe more premium level players that are in the mid-teens or the low teens that we just don't have the luxury of picking based off where we finish. So for those of you guys saying, go do something because you want action. To me, that action needs to be, how do we harvest value and cap space for the future? Yeah. It's not how do we bring in, you know, how do we get rid of a first round pick? That doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I would, for a season like this, even at 3-5, you know, which is where the Ravens could be facing the trade deadline coming up on November 4th. I think that anything where they would trade a first, second, or third round pick would be too much to acquire talent. If they want to trade a four to try and get a key pass rush piece to turn things around, okay. I mean, I first of all, I want to know what it is, but I just, right. They might be trading real value away, by the way. They might be trading a top of the fourth round pick or near the top of the fourth round pick that would be, they're going to really dislike what they did. And you want to find a team that really regrets trading their first round pick in the pack. Look at the 1998 Atlanta Falcons, who 1999 actually, who just had to have, I forget who it was, but traded for the Ravens 37th overall pick in exchange for their number one in 2000. And they figured, hey, we just went to the Super Bowl. What could go wrong? And then, of course, everything went wrong for the 1999 Falcons, and the Ravens ended up with the fifth overall pick, and it's Jamal Lewis. Mm-hmm. So you want to really screw yourself, just make a trade like the Falcons did.
Yeah, agreed.
All right. I always a pleasure talking football with you, Matt. I think this is as good a discussion we could have on this. And apologies to Voss, because this is just not the kind of thing that will fit on Friday Morning GM to go through every single one of these. Voss and I will talk about it in a more sketched out way, probably as the trade deadline approaches, probably not this next week. Appreciate you doing this with me, Matt. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at 20 Kid Rock.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks for being listeners. As always, please like and subscribe if you're on YouTube. Best advertising is word of mouth. Please, even with today's algorithm, please tell one new person about this show. That's what I would ask. We're in all kinds of aggregation. The podcast is well known. Some direct representation of what you appreciate about this podcast is always appreciated in terms of you telling that one person. You don't have to put it online anywhere. Just tell people about it. Anyway, thanks for listening. For Matt Ruff, this is Ken McCusick, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.